Chapter 6, Sacrifice. Ich-ich-upi, to give of oneself an offering. The Story of the Thunders. In the old days, some men took more than one wife. We wonder today what that might be like to have more than one wife. Sometimes we laugh about it, and some of us deep down could be a little envious. Back then, however, when a man had more than one wife, it meant that he had to work harder. He had to provide more food, more meat, and more animal hides for clothing. So he had to hunt more. And if more children came, well, then he had to work that much harder. The excitement of having more than one wife was not all there was to it. Most of the time it was for a practical reason, like when a man would take the wife of a friend who was killed in battle. Or he would marry the younger sister of his wife because the first wife wanted it that way. Sometimes things went smoothly, sometimes it did not. Such was the case with a certain woman in the time before the horses came. The people had moved into the open country. Across what we call the plains, there were many scattered encampments from the great muddy river west as far as the Black Hills, south to the Running Water River, and north to the Knife River. Some were as close as 1 or 2 days of travel, and others were many, many days apart. In one village just east of the Black Hills, there was a woman named Shinaluta, or Red Shawl. She had married a man who was a good provider and had a good reputation. No children were born to them for many years. Then she bore a son. So she was surprised when her husband announced that he would take a second, younger wife. An old man and woman in another village had raised a granddaughter after both her parents had frozen to death in the blizzard. They were getting on in years and wanted to see their granddaughter, Necklace, married to a good man. So they approached White Wing, Red Shawl's husband, and he had agreed. Red Shawl never once thought that she would have to share her husband with another woman, although as first wife, the sits-beside-him wife, she would be able to say how her lodge should be cared for. She was still jealous. When White Wing left to bring home the new wife, Red Shawl packed a few belongings and the bows and arrows he had made for her and stole away in the night. She tossed scraps of meat to the camp dogs so they wouldn't bark and alert the night sentinels posted around the encampment. She told no one of her plan, so when her lodge door stayed shut for several days, the people suspected she had left but didn't know where she might have gone. Some had seen such things before, a first wife moving out because of jealousy. Red Shawl traveled east, intending to stay with a cousin who was part of a band living just west of the Great Muddy River. That village meant many, many days of travel. But like all Lakota women of her day, Red Shawl was strong and resourceful. She knew how to hunt, how to be watchful of enemies, and how to pitch a safe, hidden night camp. She could not travel fast because she was carrying her weapons, a large rawhide case filled with food, and her infant son in his cradle board. He wasn't heavy, but he did need to suckle her breasts, so she would have to stop often to feed him. After a few days' travel, she decided to make camp for a day, mainly to rest her tired feet. Between the sheltering branches of 2 buffaloberry thickets high on a slope, she made a cozy camp and spent the day playing with her son. She was still confused over her husband's marriage to a second wife, and her heart was broken, but she tried not to think about that. In the afternoon, a warm breeze sang them both to sleep. Toward sundown, a deep rumble of thunder woke her, and Red Shawl saw that dark gray storm clouds had taken away the blue sky. Lightning flashed within the thick, folded clouds and turned the breezes into angry, gusting winds that suddenly bent the buffaloberry thickets and shook them about. Red Shawl gathered her things and decided to look for better shelter from the rain she knew would come. She remembered a low thicket of chokecherry not far away and hurried toward it. A summer thunderstorm is the most powerful of the beings that live above the prairie country, second only to the great twisting winds that can uproot great trees and fill the skies with their terrible blackness. Redshawl had never seen such a wind, but was fearful that she might. She had to bend into the gusts to keep from falling and turn away from the wind as leaves stung her face. She covered her baby's cradle board as small branches flew like arrows and dust stung her eyes. An angry gust tore her food pack away from her and tossed it a long stone's throw, nearly pulling the cradle board away too. She crawled the last few paces to a low thicket, covering her baby with her body to protect him from the wind that was now a steady roar in her ears. Her food gone, her weapons lost, she pushed into the thicket and curled up in a ball with her back to the wind. Then came wind-driven, cold, heavy drops that felt like pebbles when they hit bare skin, and with them came a sudden darkness. Redshawl could do nothing but huddle over her baby to shield him from the storm. The rain turned into a cloudburst, drenching the land. She was soaked to her skin, and her deerhide dress was cold and heavy. Little by little the wind slowed, but the rain kept pounding the land. Tiny streams of water coursed around them, and Redshawl had to lift the cradleboard off the grass to keep her baby as dry as possible. Wiping the water out of her eyes, she tried to look around for a high spot, a hill or a knoll, knowing the safest place for them was high ground. Redshawl had never been alone in bad weather. In the past, when a winter blizzard soared over the land, she was safe in her mother and father's lodge. When a spring and summer windstorm suddenly fell upon them, everyone in the encampment pounded down the picket pins tight and closed their lodge doors. If there was danger, it didn't seem as bad because many people were around. Now, as the cold rain pelted her face, Redshawl suddenly understood what it meant to be truly alone. She was alone in a dark land that existed only as far as she could see. She hung on tight to the cradleboard and headed for the south side of a long gully, hoping to climb its ridge and find some shelter, any shelter. Slipping and sliding in the mud slowed her down, so she stopped to rest in the lee side of a sturdy cottonwood tree. The rain kept coming down heavier and heavier, until every low area was running with water. A soft whimper reminded her that her breasts were full and it was time to feed the baby. Turning away from the rain as much as she could, she opened the covering of the cradleboard and fed the hungry baby. For a few moments, she forgot about the rain as she enjoyed the closeness she felt with her baby. He was so hungry, he quickly drained her breasts, so she switched him to the other. Resting against the tree, Redshawl shivered in her wet clothes, thankful that she had managed to keep the baby as dry as possible. The sudden storm had shaken her up, reminding her that life was a journey full of the unexpected, like a second wife for her husband. She knew his reason for taking that second wife was not to replace her, but to provide a place for someone who would need a provider and a protector. Redshawl looked at her son, at his trusting eyes. Her fit of girlish jealousy had placed him in danger. She felt small and foolish. When the storm passed, she would head home, she decided. The wind had taken away her food and weapons, and it would be beyond foolish to continue her journey. Perhaps, she thought, the wind was trying to teach her a lesson. Redshawl drew her son close and then heard a low, rumbling noise. A strange kind of thunder seemed to roll down from the sky. Then she realized it was not thunder from the clouds or the wind. It was a flash flood rolling down a deep gully, the gully she was in. Redshawl had never in her life seen anything like the mass of dark rolling water rushing toward her. Broken tree branches rolled with the churning water, reaching up and out like hands wanting to pull her in. It was no use to run, she knew. The rolling water would sweep them away. She forced herself to look away from the approaching death and somehow looked up to the fork of the sturdy cottonwood. But there was no time to climb. She stood and reached up as high as she could and jammed the cradleboard into the fork of the tree. Tying the straps around the fork, she prayed even as she wept, "Grandfather, take me if you must, but spare my son." The cold water grabbed her legs and pulled her into its churning black current. Rachel awoke in cold and blackness, yet her body seemed hot with pain as she coughed and coughed. After painfully pulling herself to a sitting position, she realized she was caught in sandbar willows. She was somewhere near a river or a creek, she thought, because sandbar willows only grew along stream banks. Then she heard the gurgling voice of flowing water. Remembering the flood, she tried to jump to her feet. A hot, stabbing pain in her ankle stopped her, and she had to lean back until the pain passed. In the blackness of the night sky above, she saw stars. The storm had passed. Shivering, she tried to remember everything, but the only picture in her mind was a churning wall of dark, murky water.